Hello and welcome back to the Pre-Construction Podcast. It's Gareth McLinn here, your host, with all your pre-construction crack. I cannot believe it's 3 weeks until Advancing Pre-Construction in Denver this year. Remember, if you're going, please join me as I co-host a happy hour. I'm co-hosting it with Concentric, Project Mark and Tokel AI. And we are meeting at Henry's Tavern on Thursday the 2nd from 6:30 to 9:30. So if you're at Advancing Pre-Construction, come and join me for some beers and some nibbles. Without further ado, I want to introduce today's guest. His name is Blake Unlin, and he is one of the biggest success stories within pre-construction in the Southeast. He is Director of Pre-Construction at Juno, but he started with Juno in 2017 as a project engineer. So that's 7 years from project engineer to Director of Pre-Construction. A Clemson graduate, we go through A, why he studied civil engineering at Clemson, and B, how did he find those early years at Juno, going through a little bit of operations experience, then deciding to go into pre-con, and then how did he manage to progress through the ranks so quickly? What was the skills he needed? What was the things that he needed to learn? How did he go about learning them? Brilliant, brilliant conversation. He's a real, real smart cookie, is our Blake. I also wanted to discuss project delivery. We were both talking about a stat that we came out this week. It was 87% of all projects are under some sort of collaboration delivery model right now. So that in itself leads to different skills within a team. As Director of Pre-Construction, I wanted to talk to him about how he goes about recruiting, retaining and developing his pre-construction talent, because the skills that are needed now for a pre-construction manager are completely different to historically what is needed as an estimator who's going to sit in the corner, no windows, no light, head down, bum up, looking at figures and numbers. Really enjoyed that. And I also wanted to discuss what is the success within Juno itself. So he goes into that in great detail also. Listen, without further ado, I'll put it over to Blake. Just before that, we, as usual, hear from our two sponsors, Concentric and Beck Technology. Enjoy.
Stuck in spreadsheets? Tired of the endless loop of copying and pasting? Now imagine all your estimating workflows in one program. Beck Technology's innovative Destiny Estimator software streamlines the entire estimating process. With intuitive tools and powerful analytics, you can create accurate and reliable estimates quickly and easily. We understand the challenges pre-con teams face because we were born from construction. When you are ready to streamline your estimating effort, visit us at beck-technology.com and talk with a tech expert in a Destiny Estimator demo today.
Blake Unlin, welcome to the Pre-Construction Podcast.
Good morning. How are you doing? I'm glad to be here and I appreciate you having me.
Look at that fresh face for 8 a.m. in the morning. That's some nice tidy. I would say you weren't up at 7:30. I would say you were up at 5:30 at least.
I'd say something like that. we try to wake up and be productive. I think it's the best way to start the day. So either going to the gym or coming in early is a good way to get the juices flowing before all the team meetings start happening. Business starts at 8:00. So
yeah, I'm the same. If I don't work out in the morning time, it doesn't happen. By the time I get home, I'm mentally and not so much physically drained, but I'm mentally drained, and that's just enough to knock me out of not going to the gym.
So 100% agreed.
I agree. Well, listen, thanks for coming on. Congratulations as well. For anybody who doesn't know, Blake was just promoted a couple of months ago to Director of Pre-Construction at Juno in Atlanta, Georgia. So well done. How does it feel?
It's feeling good. It's it's always stressful taking the next steps, but I think with where I'm at and the team that we have around us, it's something that's more of a comfortable situation than I was anticipating. Even just across the board, the support from the staff and the team that I work with every day in our pre-construction group, which is a group of 10 out of Atlanta, to even just the other supporting staff. I mean, it's, you walk around here and you feel like everyone's looking to help each other out. So with the growing pains and the first stressful steps, it hasn't been too bad. So I've been very lucky and I got a good team to work with.
Good, good. I'm going to take a picture of this hair now without any grays. And
then you gotta see the sides. They're coming in. They're coming in. You can't see them just yet, but I promise you, they're there.
Brilliant. That comes with the title, the director of Precon. Love it. Yeah, we're going to get into that in detail. I want to know how the transition is. Obviously, being there for so long, 7, 8 years, it's obviously a natural transition, but you know yourself, there's extra responsibility. So I want to dig into that later. But I want to kind of take it back to Clemson. Obviously, we all know how good Clemson is as a university. What were the thoughts on going into civil engineering as a degree? Was it always going to be construction for you?
It really wasn't. It was one of those things, you know, before I even went to Clemson, I grew up on the West Coast. So for me, when I was going to school, I wanted to find a new place, get myself out of my comfort zone a little bit. And so I think most of us don't really know exactly what we want to do when we get to school. And I knew that science, math, numbers, those types of things piqued an interest. So once we started going through the classes, getting into year two, year three, and starting to see the options of scheduling, BIM, pre-construction, it's kind of either that route or it's the route of geotechnical structural design. And for me, I want to be more of the execution, the doing side of things. So construction was a no-brainer. And it really allowed me to take all the things that I learned, was passionate about, and apply them every day. I think, and I'll hit on it a little bit too, but one of the early stepping stones in my pre-construction career was being tasked with the difficult site work, deep foundation packages, and those just take so much more than things on paper. You know, you can't read the plans and they tell you how to execute that. You have to think about, how are the soils going to react? How do you hold up a 20-foot hole in the ground? So those types of things, you know, that's where the knowledge and background from civil engineering come into play, just because you know the critical thinking about how things work. So that's a little bit, but you know, once I went there in school, it's just, you see all these other people that are doing internship and co-op programs with these massive general contractors. And there's so much opportunity brought to you by the university and your peers that you get those first few years of experience while you're in school. So then when you actually get out year one, you have a little bit of a stepping stone and a platform just to get out there and run a little bit faster. So it was good. It was a lot. There's some tricky classes, you know, fluid mechanics and some other things. But once you get out there in the real world, you know how to apply everything. And it's just a huge tool in the belt.
Brilliant. I love it. Yeah, I see a lot of people coming out with the civil engineering degree and particularly going into pre-construction. So the more the merrier, as far as I'm concerned. And then after that, straight into Genoa as a project engineer. Obviously, from what I see, the best pre-construction folks are the people that come from the field. How was that transition? Because we all know that book smart and practical smart it's sort of different.
Yep. No, they are different. They go hand in hand, but they're definitely very different. So, you know, when I was in school, I got that year and a half or so field experience. And without even knowing what pre-construction is, I think that's something that our industry talks about all the time. A lot of schools, unintentionally, or internship programs, they don't really teach you the pre-construction side. It's just like there's two paths. It's either you're going to be a project manager or you're going to be a superintendent. And that's kind of what it is. So when I first hired on with Juno, it was one of those things where I was like, all right, you know, it's a no-brainer. I'm going to go down the project manager side. That allows me to do more accounting, utilize some of my skill sets with scheduling and all that. I was sitting there for the first few months and I was like, man, I'm still not on a project. What am I doing? And it's just the nature of the industry. I didn't know at that time that the workload, it ebbs and flows. So projects only start every couple months, and sometimes it's half a year and a couple start at once. So I was sitting there with our director at the time, and I kind of came to his office, and he was really good at pushing the people to come up to him and figure out, what does my career path look like? And that's something I've tried to embody with my current team. But told him, I was like, hey man, you know, I love working with numbers and this pre-construction group. I've been working with you as kind of an honorable mention for the last 6 months. Can you let me in full time? And I was fortunate enough to be able to switch. And that's something that our company does, is empower people to take that step and move laterally within the company to retain some of the talent too. So that was my stepping stone that I got it all started. And it was definitely not what I expected, but I've been very, very lucky to have that. So it's been good.
And what do you think in your tool belt did you think was the main reason that you gravitated toward pre-construction? Was it that math, that science, that engineer within you? Or was it the kind of, I'm going to see a lot more projects here, I'm going to be kept very, very busy, and having that appetite?
I think what it was at first, it was the problem solving side, you know, as an entry level estimator. And there's every general contractor is totally different the way they operate. But for Juno, what we do is usually an entry level estimator. They'll start out with interiors, division 10, some of the smaller trades. And, you know, you might have 10 or so trades on your first project. And my first project, I had a complex site package and a very in-depth structural concrete package. And we self-perform that work. So we're talking getting into the nitty gritty of rebar, formwork, ready mix, and all these things that you're just not even exposed to the first 3 months. Usually it really opened up my mind right away. And I was like, all right, there's so much more to this than just doing takeoffs and drawing boxes, like the logistics, the problem solving, the talking with your subcontractors about how might even access the site. You know, if we have 20,000 yards of export, does it have to go off site because we don't have the space to stockpile it? There's things like that. And all of a sudden I was like, oh man, there's so much more to it than just numbers and drawing boxes. Like, this is pretty cool. And then that's kind of where I loved it. And, you know, from there, you start to get introduced every 4 or 5 months or so, you get a new project. And so all of a sudden you're like, okay, this is pretty cool. You know, I figured this out in my last one. And it's like, I'm feeling a little dangerous now. I can figure out site work on my own. I don't need to ask all the questions to my team. I kind of know what to coordinate. And really, that's kind of what created this trajectory in my career. And I think a lot of other young professionals is, if you can go out and solve problems, and if you want to figure it out, a lot of places are going to certainly let you do that happily. And, you know, they want to see people be empowered and successful. And for me, it was just, I had that opportunity and ran with it.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, it's pretty evident. I mean, project engineer to director of pre-con in 7 years. It's pretty impressive. Coming now towards I'd say 3 months ago then, going from senior pre-con manager up to director. What has that entailed? What sort of responsibilities? You said there that you kind of were given a bit of foresight into it. You knew it was coming, but it's probably still doesn't prepare you for everything, you know. What has been good about it? What has surprised you, and what have you enjoyed?
I think the hardest part of the transition is, you know, if you break down, for me, I was looking at this morning, I was breaking down my career in almost kind of a first half and a second half. And conveniently from when I started, it's kind of the COVID mark. It's funny looking at it that way, but really for me, the first 3 or 4 years pushing into 2020, 2021, when the world got flipped upside down, my role at that time was pretty much a pre-construction engineer, senior pre-con engineer. And the task was as simple as, here are your list of trades. They're going to get harder each project. And you go from site work to, you know, the facade, the interiors, you get more well-rounded. And then ultimately that final stepping stone for our team is, all right, can you now look at things and coordinate MEPs with the team? Can you start to look at things logistically? And all of that is basically the skill set that I worked on trying to master, or do the best that I could to master that. And then once COVID hit, you know, we had a few positions open up. And while those positions were opening up, the projects were still going forward. So as a company, we're not going to sit there and not take advantage of these opportunities. So a role opened up for me at that time to lead my first couple of projects in 2021 as a pre-construction manager. And all of a sudden I realized there's so much more than Blake getting his stuff done. And there's, you know, there's a whole team of 3 to 4 estimators. You got to make sure that everyone's executing at this high level all the time. And it starts turning into how much the day is for my stuff versus how much the day is for the team's greater good and just coordinating and keeping the ball rolling. And I think that's been the biggest transition for any young manager or leader in a company, is just, how does my time shift? And I ultimately have to become unselfish to make sure that the team can grow and excel. You start having a couple projects at once, and really, I think the biggest key to success is organization, keeping the ball moving, and just having the team just be active and responsive. And that's how we can be successful. So my biggest hurdle has definitely been figuring out time management for sure. I think I got it figured out, but I assure you that I don't. It's one of those things that I think we always try to keep figuring out and improving for ourselves.
Yeah, and you know yourself, Blake. I mean, it's about your capacity, what you're capable of doing at any one time. I always believe that time management, you think you've mastered time management until you have children, and then everything just goes out the window. It's just, but again, coming and managing people so young and being able to, not master it, obviously we're all still learning, but being able to get that exposure so young, I mean, that will stand to you come the later days of your career. But that's great advice for younger people. And then we kind of talked pre-recording here on the stat that I was introduced to this week, or no, it was actually last week on a webinar. 87% of projects are under some sort of collaboration delivery model right now. You talked about it earlier in your early days about getting the divisions right, being in there, getting the numbers right, that was your responsibilities. Because of this amount of collaboration that is required in each project, how has the skill set changed that you need for your team? And how have you seen the evolution of not only pre-con folks, but your team in Juneau?
100%. And I think part of the natural, you know, our group as a whole is relatively younger. And a lot of us started at similar times as the others. So we've had this group that's kind of grown together over the last few years. And I think that's something that's kept us close knit. It's kept us able to grow and keep this kind of single mindset that we all share. But to answer your question, you know, I'll go back a few years, like 3 to 4 years ago, when I was starting to lead some of the first projects, when COVID was happening. Although COVID was happening, projects were still penciling themselves, you know, and there was the discussion about escalation and capping risk. But other than that, it wasn't as easy as just plugging numbers and letting projects work, but things penciled a lot easier, especially on the multifamily side of things. And I think the biggest shift, you know, with all these projects and having this collaborative delivery model is over the last few years, people have realized, you know, when the market gets hard, or even when it's kind of a normal place, everything is so competitive now that it's not just penciling in numbers and getting subbids and putting them down and turning it into a client. That's not going to get the job done anymore. So for us, our model and how we've shifted is everyone's figuring out how to be engaged in that design build process. And there's so many ways on how you can execute that model, but having some type of involvement, whether it's controlling the structural design or controlling the MEP design, there's so many things that you can do. And it's so much more than just having the structural MEP under a general contractor and saying you own the design, but it's really getting in, you know, having those weekly coordination meetings with the structural engineer and challenging each other, like challenging them on how was our last project, you know, 75% of the amount of reinforcing as this one. Or from an MEP perspective, you look at the last few projects and be like, I feel like we were able to go through and, you know, by means of looking at the code book, we were able to have a few options come out of this to improve the package. And at the end of the day, it's all about having the numbers shift, having the project pencil while maintaining the client vision. The last thing that you want to do is just go and hack away from the facade of the building or the interiors. At the end of the day, you want it to look, feel and perform the same and have all of your work be in the areas that the client doesn't even see or have to think about. So it's just about getting creative with the team and even with the subcontractor market. At the end of the day, they're the experts too. And so relying on them and relying on some of those people you work with on, you know, half or more of your projects, we're a team. So we got to figure out and use our resources, not just have me and the estimators, you know, plug numbers all day, because that's not going to get it done.
Yeah, I love it. And I think there's a case as well that the projects are getting bigger, they're getting more complex, and they're getting more expensive. So the creativity that general contractors are having to do, it's allowing them to be a little bit autonomous and being creative as well. Whereas before it was very, very, well, I don't want to say very, very straightforward, but a little bit more straightforward.
Yeah, no, 100%. It was. And I think the biggest thing too is, you know, while we're busy and while every facet of our industry is busy, you have to think that the clients that we're acting on behalf of, they're obviously busy as well. And, you know, respecting their time and ours, a lot of times when you get to that repeat work and that repeat client, there's a level of comfort that's built up too. And so while the client understands, you know, what is Juno's reporting going to be? Are they going to be giving me the updates, good or bad? And once that trust increases, they allow ourselves and the design team to run faster with making decisions. They trust us. And I think that shared trust really allows us to speed up the design timeline, make decisions early in the process rather than wait till, you know, once you break ground, those decisions take five times as long, have triple the cost impact. So if we're acting and doing everything responsibly in the pre-construction stage, there's just so many benefits. That list is so long that once you break ground, the whole team's just rolling.
Yeah, Blake, I think that's where the 87% number comes from. Clients understand this. They realize this. They have realized the previous projects. They've got the data to back it up. The more and the quicker we get involved and the earlier we get involved with the general contractor and even the subs, then the better it is for the final outcome. And then that's where the communication side comes in. The majority I'm seeing, the majority of the responsibilities and the skills needed for pre-construction staff is that ability to communicate and to collaborate. And then that in turn builds the trust.
Yep. Yeah. 100%.
Yeah, I love it. And then talk to me as well. I mean, one of the things on my recent webinar was obviously people, processes, and technology. I think those are kind of the pillar. You mentioned there on the reporting side when the client is asking, how do you report? This is what we want. I've had a client recently talk about, a GC talk about the client wanted us to report in this different software, so it was duplicate and it was doing things differently. How do you get that sort of ironed out at the very beginning with a client? Do they always use the technology that you use?
No. The technology is, although I wish it was shared, it really isn't a lot of the time. You know, you have clients, and I think that the biggest thing for us is the new work, and we do a lot of work at universities and with private developers as well. So when it's your first time working with a client or through a university process, we're always going to accommodate the request of other groups. Of course, it's a lot easier, and what we would like to do is use our spreadsheets, but usually in those situations, again, it's just respecting others and their requests, just like we would want from us too. So when we do that process, we'll bid it exactly like we normally would, you know, that 5 to 6 week period for myself and the team. We're pulling together the estimate using our software, our level of comfort that we have, and then really what we do to accommodate other forms or requests is that last few days before we submit the bid, it's almost like a data translation stage. And it's just making sure we're checking all the boxes, getting everything right. Because understandably, from a client's perspective, you know, if they're getting two or three bids from general contractors, if they're not in the same format, they're going to be very difficult to interpret just by means of inclusions, exclusions, formatting. So I get it 100%. And we try to do the same thing with some of our sub bids as well.
Yeah, it's, I mean, listen, ideally, in an ideal world, the client, the architect, the GC, and the sub would all use the same technology and the data would flow in and out of one technology piece of software or multiple. And it's a difficult one, but I think we are, I mean, the whole technology space, pre-construction technology space, is moving in the right direction. I think when you talk about reusing data, I think that's a key part of it, especially on the client side and the GC side, to be able to show to the client, say, listen, these are the other three hospitals that we built. These are the other three extensions to universities that we did, and this is where we save money, and this is where we can get creative.
Yep. And I think you hit the nail on the head. And, you know, after listening to a few of the other podcasts you've had and other guests, I think we share a lot of the same interests and goals that some of your other guests have had too. One of the tools that we put a tremendous amount of time into and have dedicated resources in our office now is for Power BI. And looking at past projects and data metrics, I think I speak for a lot of listeners, I imagine, when I say that oftentimes when you're plugging an estimate, the natural instinct is just to go through your file structure and think, all right, what was the best project? And you pull it up, you know, you got your pencil and pad out, you're jotting down numbers, what makes sense, what doesn't. Power BI is this great tool that does everything for you. While it does take an amount of time to enter in and put all that data, the amount of overall impacts and results you can draw from that and conclusions, it saves a lot of time. And so I give props to our team that's really taken that suggestion and run with it and put a lot of resources in, because it's just a good tool. It's a good tool for us to challenge the submarket. It's a good tool for our clients to see, you know, how does that project shake up against two or three of their own past projects, let alone other competitors in the market too. It's just talking about metrics and seeing what's changing over time. And if you're not in that wave and keeping up, you'll fall behind pretty quick.
Yeah, and I mean, all that data that you're showing, it can be used across the board in the company. It can be used with marketing. It can be used with the sales guys. It can be used with the ops teams. The funny thing you say there about the best project, that kind of reminds me of an analogy with a football team, a football manager. You never learn anything if you go and blitz the other team. You only learn from the matches that you lose. Very few managers go and get into the granular detail about how they won that game. They just go, thank God that's over. We got the win and let's move on. The best projects are obviously, and the biggest lessons learned are the projects that don't go well. So, I mean, Power BI, it's talked about a lot. I mean, advancing pre-construction now in May in Denver. And I know that a lot of people will be talking about that.
Yep. And I think it's funny that you said that. It's because, honestly, until you said it loud, I don't even think about it that way. But now that you're saying it, whenever I do lose a project, I look at it way more the next week after. So I couldn't agree with you more. You know, pain hurts sometimes, but you want to fix it and have it not happen again.
And it's like anybody's career. I mean, you only really learn when you're thrown into the deep end. I'm thinking about your trajectory. I mean, you would have learned so much, but it's asking questions, learning from the mistakes, and not dwelling on them too much, but taking the positives and moving forward fast. And especially in construction, because it's an ever changing environment, it's important that they do that.
Yeah, no, you have to roll with the punches. And I think, you know, one thing I did want to share while on this platform with you too, there's so many tools that you can have in pre-construction, and most teams have individuals that have their strong points and strengths. And I think one thing that we have on our team, and I'm sure every team out there has, is, you know, the people that are very detailed and they're the smartest in the room when it comes to that skill set, the tech mindset, and just executing. And really for me, is the biggest thing that changes someone from an estimator to a manager is the soft skills side of things. And it's just understanding that you might be able to execute at a very, very high level comfortably, but if you want to take that next step, and for the people that, you know, you identify that want to take that next step, you got to learn the soft skill side. And the only way that you can do that is by being uncomfortable and being put in positions by your own leadership and asking your leadership to tell them, hey, I do want to be client facing. I would like to be running this weekly coordination call with the owner, architect, engineer. There are these things that people might not feel empowered to do, but I just challenge everyone to go and have this conversation with your executive group or your leaders. I'm sure they'll be very happy that you're looking for that opportunity. And it's something that will benefit you in the long run. It'll benefit your team's growth. And I think by leading by example, you can show other people on your team that, hey, they can do it too. Yeah. And so you have this team environment that pushes each other to keep growing and keep growing. And all of a sudden you look around and you stop for a second. You're like, wow, we're building something here. And I think it's a cool thing to see, but it's just one of those things you gotta get out of your comfort zone sometimes.
I love that advice. Basically, what's the worst thing can happen? That your director, your manager can say no, and then that follows up and it opens up another discussion. Okay, why not? What do I need to do? What do I need to learn? What do I need to improve on? I love that advice. Brilliant. Yep. And then it's funny, Blake, when you think about your position now, director of pre-construction. When you, and this kind of comes up with what you've just discussed, I see, and I'm going to try and get your crystal ball out. In 3 to 5 years, a high-performing pre-construction team, and you can kind of pick the bones out of this, I see it with maybe a few pre-construction data engineers, maybe a BIM VDC person, a traditional estimator, and a pre-construction manager. Am I wrong, or what am I missing there in the future high performing pre-construction team?
I think you hit a lot of the right parts. I think, and depending on the company structure, it's a little bit different. And the way that we operate is our pre-construction team, we have a separate VDC and BIM team. So we collaborate together, and that allows us to focus on, you know, working with them to identify what data they can extract. And it allows our team to execute and run with that data. So I think you hit on all the right parts. And I think that pre-construction manager with a team of 2 to 3 estimators is something that we see ourselves maintaining. The one thing that, you know, I think a lot of groups and including ourselves are looking at is how can you maintain that high level of execution from the pre-construction stage, that first year, you know, year and a half, from schematic all the way to that GMP round. And once you finally get to that point where you can execute a contract with a client, how do you allow for a clean transition from pre-construction to operations and continue to execute? And I think for us, we're looking at this as pre-construction being so much more than just the estimating side of things and the number crunching, but how can we set up our team for success in the field day one? How can we allow for a clean, smooth, and seamless buyout process with the subcontractor awards? And looking at, you know, does that want to have a dedicated purchasing manager across a few projects? Because there's so many things that GCs know, and I'm sure a lot of people hearing this will agree, is there's so much more to a project than your one project at one time. You have to look at it and make sure, all right, am I not just overloading my team with projects executing at one point, but you probably don't want to sign up the same drywall subcontractor on every project. There's things that you have to think about. And if you're not looking for them, they're easy to go overlooked and you can have all your eggs in one basket, so to speak. So for us, I think it's executing beyond the pre-construction stage of something that we're really putting a focus in right now.
Brilliant. And what do you think is the key to that? And just looking at your historical projects that you've done at Juno, what has worked well during that handover?
I think for us, it's the communication side. You know, it's I talk to peers at other general contractors across the board, and I don't think everyone has a system that's 100% perfect, but people are looking to improve. It's the biggest thing is making sure that neither the pre-construction or the operations side feel like an island during the subcontractor award process. You want to make sure that everyone's heard and that, you know, you maintain that budget while getting the team, the subcontractor groups that can execute at a high level and meet that schedule. With what we do in student housing, especially that the end date doesn't change. So when you're looking at numbers, you got to think about, all right, what type of horsepower are we putting in this project to make sure that it turns over on time? That's something we haven't missed a turnover date and no one ever wants to. So it's changing your mindset to, all right, let's not just think about how many dollars we can save right now, but there's that fine line of, are we comfortable with this team we're assembling? Cause we're assembling that team that's going to be there the next 2 years and they're going to make or break the project with the support of our team. And it turns so much more into not just Juno, but it's Juno and 30 to 40 subcontractors. So making sure everyone's on that same wavelength is hard. And then making sure everyone's on that same wavelength across multiple projects, making sure that we're not spreading our subcontractors too thin, that's not an easy task. But that's something we're looking to improve on.
That's why we love pre-construction, because it's so, so important. I mean, that's what the podcast is all about. And I really appreciate your feedback. It's about networking with your peers, finding out what other people are doing well, getting that into your processes, and then being able to do it better, being able to build bigger, safer, and technically better buildings, you know. So I love that, Blake. Listen, this has been absolutely fascinating. Really, really enjoyed that. Is there anything else you want to touch on before we head off?
I think the biggest thing is I would just float out there is, you know, to everyone, my message will keep being the same. Just it's okay to be uncomfortable. And I think that's the way that people will grow. And it's something that, you know, I challenge everyone. If you're in a spot where you don't know what that next step is, find that person in your company that you can talk to and lean on for just strategy and discussion. And it can be someone that is, you know, above you in the trajectory of where your next steps are. It can be a direct peer, but find people that can continue to push you and vice versa. It's just something that will allow your whole group to grow and be kind of like-minded throughout the whole process. So that's our biggest thing we're pushing, is making sure that everyone feels like they have the opportunity to keep growing. And this is a market that you know, we're trying to get more folks in this construction industry and trying to lead by example and find the right people and retain them. It's hard to do. But I think that's the biggest challenge that everyone's seeing in the industry is getting that right team, keeping it growing, keeping it moving forward.
Yeah. And I think you're 100%. I think what Juno have done really well is they've created that culture that when they do hire the right people stay. And I think that, to me, that is the foundation. You need to get that right rather than just going and hiring and hiring and hiring and then not having the culture or the autonomous environment that they need to go into to excel and get that growth. And you're a perfect example of that at Juno.
Yeah, no, it's been great being here, and it's one of those places where you feel supported. So I've been very fortunate to be here, and it's been great talking about everything today.
Brilliant. And we cannot wait to see your growth and Juno's growth as well. Listen, Blake, a big thank you. If there is anybody listening to this now and they say, you know what, Blake touched on a couple of points there that I would like to ask a few more questions, where's the best place to get you?
I'd say you could find me a lot of different places, but you know, either LinkedIn or reaching out, Garrett, through you directly. I'm always open to talking to other people in the industry, whether it's in the Southeast, Northwest, could be anywhere. Open to picking people's brain and learning more about other processes too. I think the biggest thing is at one point not feeling like we're doing the best over everyone else. I think it's a whole industry just trying to learn from each other. At the end of the day, one company isn't going to build every project, and we know that. So let's just learn from others around us and keep figuring out how we can overall just build a better city one place at a time and work next to each other, because we're all going to be in the same sandbox. So let's do it friendly and figure it out together at the end of the day.
Here, here. I totally agree with you. And that's the mindset. That's the mindset we need. And that's why the podcast exists, to be able to share and get the best of the best on. And you're definitely that. Blake, it's been a pleasure. What I'll do, anybody listening, I will put Blake's LinkedIn profile down below in the show notes. So if you do want to connect with him, network with him, pick his brain, feel free to do so. We definitely will have you back on as well, Blake, once you settle into the pre-con director role. And I want to hear how it's going maybe in 12 months. So thank you.
Okay, that sounds like a plan. Thank you and have a good day.
Hi, I'm Steve DeLordo, founder and CEO of Concentric, the first holistic platform for pre-construction. As a former executive officer of one of the largest general contractors in the U.S., I have experienced firsthand the challenges the industry is facing, particularly in pre-construction. Pre-construction is still a highly manual and fractured collection of processes. Essential information is kept in ad hoc, scattered spreadsheets and documents, which really limits the understanding and hides the full picture of a project for all those involved. Concentric is here to change that. Our 360-degree platform unites data, workflows, and people. With Concentric, you and your team can access real-time insights and data, assess and mitigate risk to ensure a successful project outcome, and most importantly, unlock the enormous capacity of your talent and your data. To learn more about Concentric and to book a demo, head to our website, concentric.com. That's spelled concentric.com. Concentric, it's pre-construction recalibrated for the modern builder.
Well, folks, what a breath of fresh air Blake is. As he said there, I will put his LinkedIn profile in the show notes. Please go and hit him up with any follow-up questions. If you have any questions that maybe I can answer, just reach out to me as well. We're all here to help. Again, thank you for your listening. Thank you for your support. Please subscribe, like, and share with your friends and peers. Until the next time.